From the studio in Sun City, Arizona Boomer Radio presents Wealth DNA with Ron, the Ronald Naraki. Wealth DNA gives you insights and methods for increasing your net worth. Ron's experience dealing with local and international markets give him insights that can be valuable to any investor. Now here's the host of the show, Ron Naraki.
Hello, welcome to the Wealth DNA Radio Show, and I'm honored that you're joining us today. Even though we scheduled today's guest in advance, it seems like we picked almost ideal timing. And no, on today's show, we will not be discussing sequestration. Seems that every financial commentator in the U.S. and about half of all commentators around the world are talking about it. Will the conservatives who worry so much about government overspending dig in their heels and say enough is enough? Or will conservatives get together with their counterparts in Congress and the president to form a unified team for a game of kick the can down the road? Gee, maybe I just coined a very appropriate phrase. Instead of government spending, we should refer to it as government overspending, which is much more accurate. No, we won't be spending time on those questions. We'll be focusing on investment fundamentals and continue our series on alternative investments. If you do want a prediction from me, here it is. Regardless of what happens in the U.S. Congress this week, we'll be back in 2 weeks, same place, same time, bring you some great information to help you become wealthy. Today we're talking about investing in gold, and if there is an overarching theme to this show, it would be to answer the question, should you and I invest in gold and other precious metals? As regular listeners of the Wealth DNA Radio Show know, we've been doing a series on alternative investments to help you prepare, yes, you, our listeners, for what might be the biggest event of the decade, the eventual end of the 35-year bull market for bonds. You see, most financial advisors only talk about three asset classes, stocks, bonds, and cash. And to make matters worse, they tend to focus on domestic securities. So if you're located in Germany, they're talking about the securities traded on the Frankfurt Stock Exchange, or maybe even Berlin, Dusseldorf, or Hamburg. If you're located in the U.S., the financial advisors are even more guilty than others around the world. Since the U.S. markets have been the largest equity and bond market for decades, or maybe even the entire 20th century, they felt there was really no reason to research or even understand markets outside the U.S. And I'll remind you, when we had Russ Wiles of the Arizona Republic on the show several months ago, we talked about many alternatives that very conservative investors should consider to those CDs, money markets, and cash. Just last month, we had Jason Slade of Raymond James on talk about it, another alternative to bonds, MLPs, Master Limited Partnerships. In addition, we've had an overview of alternative investments. We covered direct investments in real estate, direct investment in real estate. Covered that in detail. We talked about crowdfunding, managed futures, and an overview of hedge funds. Today is February 25th. It's 2013, of course. I did remember to switch my calendar. It's 9:03 in Phoenix, Arizona, 8:03 a.m. on the West Coast, which H.L. Quist affectionately calls the Left Coast, and it's 5:03 p.m. in continental Europe. The reason I mention the various time zones is simply to remind you that unlike a local broadcast, we have listeners all around the world, some sipping coffee, some tea, and others opening a bottle of wine or pouring a pint of beer. You're listening to the Wealth DNA Radio Show. I'm your host, Ron Naraki. This show airs every second and fourth Monday at 9 a.m. in Arizona. I certainly hope you can join us each time we air, but if you miss a show, you can hear it on the archives. Just go to wealthdna.us. where we list each of the fine shows we've had, both the past and the archived ones, as well as the upcoming ones. If you want to find out about what Russ Wiles or Jason Slade said, or any of the shows on alternative investments, just go back to that archive, wealthdna.us. And by the way, the link we include in our announcement of today's show will be the exact same link to take you to the archive if you want to re-listen. Isn't technology wonderful? We welcome your comments and questions during the show. And we actually have a chat window underneath the radio player. And in addition, you can call in. So use the chat window is probably the easiest method, especially when we have lots of questions for our guest. But there's also a call-in number, 917-388-4162, and you'll find it at the top of the screen. Now, for those wondering about the U.S. equity markets, after the first down week in 2013, they're off to a positive start, but slipping. Asia was up, with Japan up about 2.5%. Europe is up about 0.5% to 1.5%, but slipping from its highs, and Brazil is basically flat. I've mentioned in the past that on Mondays, the U.S. equity market is more likely to decline than any other day of the week. Well, last week was a notable exception. The markets were closed for President's Day. Now, on that note, I think it's time to bring on our special guest, Jack A. Bass, one of Canada's foremost economists who forecast the dramatic rise in the price of gold, which obviously has happened, and the fall in natural gas prices. Don't remind me. Jack was educated in economics and law. He wrote the Gold Investor's Handbook and the Apprentice Millionaire Portfolio. They're not on your shelves. You might want to get them. So let's give a warm radio welcome to Jack Bass. Welcome, Jack, and glad you could join us today.
Happy to be with you, Ron.
Now, I gave a brief overview of your background. How do you introduce yourself? Let's say you're at a cocktail party.
Well, I'm a management consultant, and most of my work is done with companies that are failing or are treading water. I help to bring in a new set of eyes and revise the company. My personal background is an interest, a lifelong interest, in the stock market, and I've written about four or five books on that topic. The most recent one you mentioned is the Gold Investor's Handbook. And that's because in my work with individuals, helping them with their portfolios or with success coaching, I found that a lot of them need help with their retirement planning and with their savings plan. My goal always is to tell the individual client you're responsible for your own future, and that means educating yourself in financial matters and then taking a responsibility for your own financial and business future.
Okay, and I assume that when you were talking to a lot of clients, they didn't have gold in their portfolio, they didn't know much about it, so I assume that was what triggered that book.
That's exactly right. The other book that you mentioned, The Apprentice Millionaire Program, mm-hmm. is a general overview, and that what my concept is and what I try to teach people is, first of all, you have to know what the economy is and the general direction over the next two or three years. I cannot, even though I do business planning, and you're required to do planning for 5 years, five years out and beyond is just simply guessing. But you can reasonably assess what's happening in the market today and project what's going to happen in the next two or three years. Then you drill down and what sectors are going to profit most in the next few years. And in that, then, what companies listed on stock exchange are going to profit the most in the sectors that you've identified as doing well. And also, what sectors like uranium would you avoid?
Okay, all right. That's interesting. We'll even touch on that one a little bit. Now, so our listeners can do a little research during the show, and that's the nice thing about the way we're set up. How do they get more information about Jack Bass or your newsletters, your company?
I can give you, as a start, go to my company website, www.jackbassteam.com.
Mm-hmm.
And for the newsletters, the general stock market newsletter is at www.amp2012.com.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the gold, right.
Go ahead.
And the gold newsletter is www.ampgoldportfolio.com.
Correct. And I want to make sure that people get those. Okay, so let's repeat those. One is jackbassteam.com. That's the company.
Right.
AMP2012.com for the commentary on the market, and
right.
AMPGoldPortfolio.com to find
Which
out his views on gold.
That's right, and each one of them gives every day, every market day, two or three individual stocks and a review
mm-hmm.
so that they can keep up with the books, and the books are available through Amazon.com.
Absolutely. Great. All right. Really appreciate that. And when I saw some of the things on your webpage, I'm thinking, how does this guy have time to do all this stuff? I mean, it's got to be unbelievable. You work about as many as hours as I do. I think you're putting in 15, 16 hours a day to keep up with all this stuff.
That's correct.
Impressed.
You know, when you do something you love, the time flies by. It's not a chore.
Oh, boy, you're speaking to the choir now. Okay, let's start with the fundamentals, which is what we focus on in the show. Why should an investor have gold or precious metals in their portfolio?
Any study that you do of the U.S. dollar, and I think that a lot of your clients are invested heavily in the United States.
That's
shows
true.
You
obviously, because of the English language, it's going to be our base, correct?
Right, but even my clients and my newsletter followers around the world are based in U.S. equities, and the long-term trend of the U.S. dollar is a steady decline. And it goes back as far as 1957, what you bought for a quarter now costs you almost 10 times as much. And people have failed to recognize that gold is money. Paper money is not money. Gold is money. And the only thing that's going to offset that long-term decline, which is continuing in the U.S. dollar, and the battle that the yen and others are trying to devalue their currency, the only offsetting is natural resources. So I look to gold and oil. At one point, we looked at natural gas. Fallen.
Right.
Because of the success of finding so much gas in the United States and in Canada in shale, and then this is going to repeat itself around the world, that price is going to remain down for a long time. But the recovery in the economy and the need for producers to have a high value is a tremendous advantage. But oil and gold will offset the decline in the yen, but particularly the U.S. dollar.
Okay. Now, what percentage of somebody's portfolio should be gold and precious metals? And I know it's going to differ by various types of portfolios, but if you wanted to give a kind of a general rule of thumb as a starting point, what would that be?
I'd say a general rule of thumb is 20%. And my focus is not on gold, precious metals being put away in a bank vault, although certainly I think that's valuable. My focus is as a stock picker. I think there are lots of good mining stocks that are at a great discount today, and they offer the potential through growth of exploration and development and production to far offset just the falling and the rise and fall in the commodity price.
Now, I should mention, and I was going to mention it later on in the show for sure, that you happen to be based in Canada, and most of the gold exploration and mining companies actually have their registrations in Canada. So I think it's not a coincidence we happen to have you on the show.
Well, I think anyone can see that the major gold companies like Barrick, for example, you mentioned the needs of particular clients. If you're wanting to sleep at nights and you want the most secure investment, you can look to a huge company like Barrick producing 7 million ounces a year and increasing. So it's not necessary that you go to Hickle Pickle Nickel or rely on your brother-in-law knowing his barber's son invested in some remote corner of the world.
Correct. Understand. I like that. I'll have to quote you on that one. Now, how long have you been tracking the gold markets, and can you give us an overview of how the gold price has done over that time period?
Well, what I've done is going back to when the price of gold this is more than 10 years ago, was less than $800. That's when my interest was peaked or excited. And what I started to do then is recommend people going to gold stocks. Now, we've done very well since then. The price of gold today, fortunately, took a bump up. But from that time till now, it's double. And gold has had a decade-long run. Certainly, nothing goes on or straight up like an arrow forever or like a rocket. So that you have to expect these pullbacks, the same in the market. The market in 2008, of course, cratered. And people panicked out. But had they held in, you know that the market is back higher than it was in that 5-year period, and that was something that is predicted in my Apprentice Millionaire book, a rally in the market. It doesn't go up forever, but I think that if you're looking for a prediction, as all people do, the market is going to rise once this political debate gets over in March or April, and from then I see a very slow expansion, but still a very good outlook for the market, and the outlook for gold to offset the government deficits, the IMF battle of the companies trying to devalue, is to go to 1,800, and within a couple of years, over 2,000.
Okay, and we're going to drill down to that in even more detail, because this is obviously of interest to me as well as all of our listeners. Now, one of the guests on this show, Jason Slade, happened to be on recently, often describes in his various talks the price chart for gold as a big smiley face, where, for example, the last peak was back in the late 80s, and then it dipped down and real slowly and then came back up, and the upper part of the smiley face, you might say, was now recently in 2012. Is that a good analogy to use, where gold moves in these long, sweeping cycles? It's not something, even though there's obviously fluctuations on a daily basis, it's not something that moves very, very dramatically in a 3-year period. It tends to move in fairly long, sweeping cycles.
Yeah, I would agree with that, but the cycles are much longer. You have to go back to the time of FDR when they forbid U.S. citizens from holding gold. Now, gold then was at $35 an ounce, and you know that more recently, the Fed under Volcker sold off huge amounts of American gold at less than $75 an ounce. People don't bring that up. But if you look at the long-term curve, it is a rise, and what it is offsets is the long-term decline in the purchasing value of the U.S. dollar. So the two are very well correlated.
Okay, and you talk about that. What other factors influence the price of gold? Obviously, some of the daily fluctuations might just be purely random. Well, what are some of the emotions and some of the fundamentals that drive the price of gold?
Well, I think what we're seeing is that at the present time, because of the quantitative easing, the printing presses that are running both at the Federal Reserve in America and the other central banks around the world, the low inflation rate that's current, giving a rise to a very low interest rate being earned by savers, by pensioners, and by stock market, is people are looking for an alternate. Now, that helps gold in that people are saying, well, I know that if I store gold coins in my bank vault, I get nothing for it, no interest. I'm really relying on the price rising. But in a low inflationary basis, people are looking for alternatives. When the market starts to roar, as it will again, people then say, well, I'm getting nothing for gold, and the market is rising every day, and that's what I see on the news, and they switch out. But I think that one thing that we haven't mentioned is that I regard gold as insurance. I think that, contrary to paper money, gold is real money. And that's why I urge people to have 20% in gold, because it is an insurance against the cupidity and stupidity of government. I can't, you know, you really have to protect yourself. You can't rely on the government paying your pension or seeing to it that suddenly they're going to be interested in a strong dollar policy. You know, if you look back, every president says, I'm in favor of a strong dollar.
Right.
But the history for the last 60 years is the exact opposite. Cheapen the dollar, help our export market, which helps jobs, and export as much as we can. And in truth, most people see that small amount of depreciation in their purchasing value every year, year after year. So I urge my clients, you look at the history of it and protect yourself. No one else is going to do it for you.
I like that. Now, let me remind our listeners, you're tuned to the Wealth DNA Radio Show. I'm your host, Ron Naraki, and I look forward to you joining us every second and fourth Monday. If you've missed some of the prior shows like Russ Wiles or the early ones on alternative investments, or if you want to re-listen to them, we maintain an archive of shows on www.wealthdna.us. If you'd like to get an email reminder of the shows, you can do one of two things, or of course both. Just send an email to me, ron@wealthdna.us, and I'll of course keep you posted about future shows and events, or up in the upper left-hand corner of the screen when you sign in. There is a Boomer and the Babe picture, and right under that there is a follow button. You'll be informed of each of the great shows on the Boomer and the Babe Network. And a reminder, during the radio show, we welcome you, our listeners, to ask questions. Just start a chat in the area below the radio player. Today we're talking about investing in gold with Jack A. Bass, an economist, author, and an expert on investing in gold. All right, Jack, where are we now in these long-term trends? This is a very, very long-term trend. And let me qualify that question. On a recent show, I used the phrase, we seem to be living in the Chinese curse, may you live in interesting times. And the U.S. stock market's been euphoric, approaching all-time highs. The G20, and you touched on Japan specifically, because that's really one of them, seem to be in a race to the bottom, that is, trying to drive their currencies to the bottom. And the only constant seems to be uncertainty is where should the price of gold be in these interesting times?
Actually, my own prognosis, and this is if you watched Art Cashin on... I think it's CNBC. He's a trader on the floor. Mm-hmm, the inflation mm-hmm. that we're seeing of the printing presses should mean that gold would be much higher than it is today. And okay. So we have the argument over conspiracies, or the central banks around the world and producers holding down the price of gold. Now, I don't believe there's a sit-down conspiracy where 1,000 people meet every month and decide right. that this is how they're going to manipulate it. But effectively, they have managed to hold the price of gold down, but it has still risen over the last 10 years. And I think at some point, as people realize what's happening with their purchasing value and that they can't rely on the quantitative easing bringing back the economy, they are going to protect themselves with gold. So I see gold much higher in a year or two than it is today. In the short term, however, the economy, the big economy of the world is the U.S. economy. It is slowly grinding itself higher. And let me give you just one statistic.
Sure. And as a matter of fact, that's good, because I just wanted to switch to the equity markets for a few minutes here. So well, let's talk about that.
I'm just currently reading the Conrad Black's biography of FDR. And in 1936, when FDR was campaigning again to be president, towards the end of the year, the increase in employment, remember they're coming out of the Great Depression,
right.
The increase employment at the end of 1936 was 155,000 jobs that particular month, something in November or December.
Coincidence.
And that is the same increase in employment in the U.S. last month, where the population is three times the size.
Exactly.
So we need jobs in the area of at least 300,000 a month to revive the U.S. economy. That is not happening. It's a long, slow grind, but it's grinding upwards. So you can still take advantage of that. Looking at that as long term, there are many great deals in the equity market today. And the junior golds, which I kind of specialize in, are really selling at a great discount. Even Barrick, the number one choice I would have is at $30, and I think that's just it's a bargain for people, because Barrick has suffered greatly with some of the decisions that they've made in the past.
Okay, all right. Now, how about the equity markets around the world? Have some of them, because they have not been held down, they seem to be just ticking up, you know, almost month after month, day after day. Have some of them gotten ahead of themselves, and some of them have upside? And where in the world do you see some of that upside?
I am not an expert outside of North America, so I want to caution people on that.
Sure.
There are cross currents, however, and the revival in Europe, in my view, is phony. They papered over the banking crisis. The Greeks are saying to the IMF, we'll pretend that we'll recover. We'll pretend that we will cut our spending and reduce our government bloating, and you'll pretend that we're going to be able to repay you. So advance us the money now, and that will happen in Spain and Italy, and we'll all pretend that things are well, but they are not well. This is not
That's
a real
crazy.
Recovery. And you cannot cut your government size or your employment and have unemployment at 25% as it is in Greece and Spain, youth employment at 50%, and you cannot recover on that basis. And if I can interject as an outsider in the U.S., the GOP austerity pledge for America, no economy in the world, there is no record of any economy in the world where you cut spending, go on an austere budget, and raise interest rates. That does not promote recovery. That is nonsense. So the U.S. is fortunate that it has avoided that GOP in the White House, but they still have the battle. Your politicians will still battle over spending or tax cuts, and you need some of both. You need some tax increase, certainly in revenue to recover, but you also need spending cuts, but some sort of a balance, not all one way or all the other.
Right. Right. Yeah, as a matter of fact, that was part of what Europe tried, right? They tried the austerity plan because that's what the Germans have been successful with.
It doesn't work. You think of yourself, if you cut your budget, it doesn't matter how much you cut, that doesn't promote great wealth. Great wealth is built by growth. And in order to get growth revived, you're going to have taxation increases, even if you're a millionaire, and then are on minimum wage. A minimum wage increase in the United States brings millions of people money, and at the minimum wage rate, they spend that money. There's a huge multiplier effect. So there are good things in the offing if those bills are passed.
Okay, so what? And this reinforces your earlier comment. We can't count on the government to figure this out.
Nope.
They haven't yet, and we haven't found too many governments around the world that are. So it's really our responsibility to figure out how to make money despite the government.
And we have available to us today and every trading day 1,000 very good companies available for investments. What I urge my readers and my clients is do the work. And I have to tell you this, Ron. I have thousands of people reading these blogs, and only a small fraction of them have purchased the books. And I don't know how you can acquire information if you don't read and if you don't spend some time. You certainly don't have to spend the time that you and I do every day, but some amount of time has to be devoted to building up a library and then constantly keeping up with economic trends and studying particular stocks to know where you should be building your portfolio.
And a few hours watching the Oscars will not do the trick. Is that what you're telling us?
Yes, but I watched.
Well, but if that were your only source, you'd be in big trouble.
Yes, well, I want to diversify my interests. But I can also tell you, I was in Richmond about 2 months ago with my wife, and the capital of Richmond was the site of about 50% of the movie of Lincoln. So if any of your visitors or any of your audience are there, visit Richmond, take the tour, and you'll see where Lincoln was filmed, a great deal of it. And also, we had the wonderful time in Washington visiting the Smithsonian. Just a wonderful view of the of so much.
Absolutely. You'd definitely learn a lot more at the Smithsonian than you would at the Capitol.
Right.
All right. Now, I did a little research in preparation for this show, and obviously I follow the gold market pretty closely. If I look over the last 5 years, you said gold done extremely well, and it turns out that it's beat the S&P 500, kind of the broad measure I tend to quote most often, by about 60 percentage points. And just to clarify for our listeners, that means if S&P is up about 10% over the last 5 years, which, by the way, is true because we had still had a down year there, gold is up by about 70%. So that's what I mean by a 60 percentage point outperformance. Now, over the last 2 years, The S&P 500 has been up dramatically, and the appreciation gold is still 60 percentage points higher. But in the last year, the last 6 months, 3 months, gold has underperformed the S&P by about 5 to 20 percentage points. So if I were just looking at charts, it would appear to me that we've entered into some sort of bear market for gold, where now the stock market is going to far outperform gold. You're disagreeing. Share again with our audience some of the views of why just that kind of research is a little bit too superficial.
Well, I don't argue with the research. The numbers are numbers, and regardless of our output, we have to be sensitive to say that we can look at the numbers and judge gold against the equity market is a good measure of how your gold portfolio is doing, but it is not a good measure of how your insurance is doing. If you have, I hope you have insurance on your life, you don't want to collect tomorrow. The idea is that
I delay collecting, the better off I am.
That's right. And ultimately, in insurance, when you win, you've lost. You're not there to benefit. But the insurance factor means that you're not terribly concerned over the price of gold over any short run. What you're doing is 20% of your money on insurance makes sure that when governments or politics or Syria fails and there's a collapse in the Middle East or the change of government in Italy and uncertainty in the future of Europe affecting America, then that you've got that extra policy. So I'm not greatly concerned with how the gold is doing in the short run. I'm concerned in the long run that the equity market will not be as good as gold will be. And if the equity market is good, I've got 80% of my wealth in equity, so I will benefit greatly. And my insurance policy is simply a payment I make to assure myself that if there is a collapse in equities, I have the offset of my gold.
Ah, the concept of hedging, which we're kind of getting to in this whole series on alternative investments, is to have some alternatives. So if one is zigging, the other is zagging. I love
it.
And I think you've given a great example of that. So if somebody was buying at the peak in 2012, I think it was 2012 when gold peaked, or was it even 2011, but nonetheless, if somebody was doing all their buying then, of course, they're down and they're disappointed. But had they held a percentage and maybe done some reallocating during that time period, they've actually performed better than those averages. So
And you shouldn't be disappointed that you bought at the top. That is exactly what Barrick did. They went out and bought Equinox Minerals for billions of dollars, overpaying by billions. Now, that led to the CEO of Barrick being fired.
Right.
And their stock has taken a hit for that. But if you're investing in Barrick today, you gain because the Barrick price is cheap because they suffered through this, and a lot of people have been disillusioned. Over the long term, though, Barrick is a wonderful investment, cheap today.
You've just added to my list, by the way, in the last few minutes. So now, you touched on this a little bit, but let me dig in. One of the financial advisors I use for information about where the markets are going and the fundamentals, H.L. Quist, and he's been a repeat guest on this show, feels there is a conspiracy happening between the Fed, some of the big banks, hedge funds, and George Soros specifically. And by the way, that happens to be the correct Hungarian pronunciation. It's not Soros as we pronounce it in the U.S. That's beside the point. But anyway, that they're trying to keep the price of gold down, or the perception that the price of gold is low, that helps the perception that inflation is low, and that's what the U.S. government statistics, and of course they give out the statistics, show that there's low inflation. What are your thoughts on this manipulation or this illusion that inflation is low and the reality? As you said, gold is down and it should be higher. Could this be a factor?
I think it's a factor. I don't think it's a conspiracy, but I think that it is quite correct that it is the interest of the Federal Reserve and the government to promote the idea that the economy is stable and recovering, and that the actions of the Federal Reserve are helpful. And I think that by the way, I think that is true. I think in 2008, if Bernanke and the Fed and the government had not entered into that massive quantitative easing, the massive printing of money, there would have been a worldwide depression. They acted at the right time. They had the right person there. The problem is that their actions are unprecedented, and we've yet to see the result. You cannot print trillions of dollars, prop up banks that had failed. Essentially, the banks had failed. You can't prop them up with billions of dollars and expend billions of dollars every month on quantitative easing without some result. You can't blow air into the balloon forever until at some time it pops. We've yet to see the result. We are seeing this in Japan, had 10 years, a decade of slow decline. The new prime minister, and he's going to appoint a new head of the central bank, are dedicated to easing, which means inflation in Japan, and it means inflation around the world. These things are interrelated. China is accused of keeping its currency down in order to promote its exports. Ultimately, we're going to see the result. My prediction is the result is great inflation, and that is great for the price of gold. And in the short term, great for equities, because as inflation puts up, companies can now pass on the prices, which they haven't been able to do. And in the short term, the equity market will pick up, gold will pick up. But the at the end of the day, the bill's got to be paid.
Okay. Now, one of the triggers for a fairly dramatic decline in gold prices last week was the news came out that Soros had sold 60% of his gold ETF. Did you see any coverage of how he reinvested that money? Maybe he put it into gold bullion, or maybe he put it into other ETFs or gold stocks, or how much profit he made. Was there any mention of that, or just the fact that he sold that?
I haven't seen that, but there are if you Google guru portfolios, there are blogs that track what Soros is doing. Remember, at the same time that he sold, Paulson retained his gold investments in ETF. So there are two well-known, very successful investors, and they have opposite views. And George Soros, and you provide... excuse my pronunciation.
Stick with it. No, that's what most people are used to. So it's good they're hearing both pronunciations. Otherwise, they may not know I'm talking about. We're talking about the same person.
Yeah.
Correct. Good.
He did not sell all his gold. He sold a substantial amount, but not all. Paulson did not sell any. He's retained it. And today, the gold price is up. So it won't be known except in the longer term. Which position is right. But having not sold all of it is a good indication that he is hedging with gold.
Okay. No, it's a fair point. I think what's interesting is there's a lot of media attention, and it may be intentional, to selling. There's very little mention of what you do with that money, or who is holding or buying. So it's just, and that's part of, I guess, the support for this conspiracy or this action to try to depress and to give the illusion of low inflation.
Caution your readers not to go or make their investment decisions by the nightly news reports. That way lies in insanity.
Exactly right. And as a matter of fact, that's one of the reasons we try to focus on the fundamentals. And quite frankly, as you'll notice, even to this point in the show, we focused more on where it's been and what some of those fundamentals are that drive prices. So that is definitely our intent, and hopefully our listeners don't make that mistake. But given there was a fairly dramatic decline in gold and precious metal prices, it reminded me of the sixth commandment of investing. Remember, markets can be irrational. Since gold prices are declining, okay, maybe because of some news announcement, and governments are trying to weaken their currencies, and this should be driving the price of gold up, at least in the long term, so what triggers a drop like that?
Well, I think what happens is that after so many years of rising prices, people simply become exhausted. What happens is that if you, and at least I have this experience, you hold a stock that you have great hopes for, and year after year it goes nowhere. At some point you say to yourself, you know, I've had enough of this. I read yesterday that the price of gold is declining. I've held it for years. I made my money. I'm going to move to something more exciting. I go to a party Everybody is talking about gold declining. I'm ashamed to say that I own gold. So I want to move into 3D printing because that's the glamorous area now. And I think some of that is simply people become tired and they lose the focus of a long-term strategy. And that's what my books try to focus on, is have a strategy in writing. It doesn't have to be as long as 500 pages of the portfolio book or even the 400 pages of the gold book. But you have to have something in writing. You have to have some philosophy that you stay to, not just the news report that gold is down today, George Soros sold, so I will sell. You'll be whipsawed like that. And I see some of that is just that. People are going by headlines, or they've been in gold for a long time. They then decide, well, I'll take my profit today. But if you take all of your profit and you're out of gold, you've fallen away from my guideline of having 20% of
insurance. All right, give me a look at this.
Okay, so what would you tell investors? I agree with you 100%. So somebody's got a large percentage of their assets in precious metals. Let's say they've got 40 or 50%, and their portfolio is shrinking while the stock market is reaching new highs. What do you tell them?
Well, my guideline is 20%, so I say that they're over-concentrated in gold, and that certainly is a reason to cut back. And you can look at the particular instances. You can prioritize your list. What is the best performing? What is the worst performing? And cut your bad performers out. Look for something else. You know, when you have the choice of...
I'm going to send him a quick message here.
Okay.
I don't know if he knows that, but we're somehow picking up some background noise from the studio, so let me let him know. But go ahead. I'm sorry for that interruption.
So I can give you a couple of names, for example. You mentioned I'm located in Canada. There are a lot of exploration companies. They are the highest risk. So if they're in your portfolio and you want to cut back on that. The chances of some cow pasture becoming a mine are 10,000 to 1. At the other end of it, you have Barrick, now producing 7 million ounces and growing. So that I would keep Barrick. And in between, there are good small companies. One I will mention to you is B2 Gold. The symbol is BTO. BTO like the
BTO.
The band,
got it. Okay.
Backman Turner Overdrive.
Yep.
And they
okay.
are producing today 200,000 ounces. They have just acquired another company. They've just merged with another company, which itself is in a different part of the world producing an additional 200,000. So they're at 400,000 in production of ounces. In 2 years, they'll be at 550,000 ounces of production. The stock is trading today at $3.12, but it has 600 million shares outstanding. So if you multiply that, you can see this is a billion-dollar company that is very shrewd management and growing. So that would be one of my keepers. And the expansion of their production means that the value in the future is going to grow by production, and in my estimate will also grow because 2 or 3 years ago, when their two or 3 years from now, when their production is larger, the profits are larger, that is a great keeper. And there's other companies like, Colossus Minerals, a symbol CSI. It is building a gold mine which will be in production in roughly 6 months. So the risk is much less than it is of an exploration company or even a company building a mine. This is only 6 months away from production. Again, it is only trading at $3 a share, Colossus Minerals. And so those are keepers in my portfolio, and those are the type of stocks I would look at, depending on your own profile.
Okay.
Can I mention BTO?
Sure.
Because I know the back notes. So it's easy for me to go along with that.
Understand. Now, for our listeners that just tuned in, You're listening to the Wealth DNA Radio Show. I'm your host, Ron Naraki. You can listen to the earlier portion on the archive, or if you missed prior shows, you can find them in the archives, wealthdna.us. Today, we're discussing investing in gold with Jack Bass, one of the top economists in Canada. And by the way, most gold and silver mining exploration companies are registered in Canada, so he's close by. Okay, Jack, let's say some of our investors do want to invest in gold. They haven't been invested a small percentage of their portfolio. They obviously today have many more alternative investments than they did back in the, let's say, 1980s when we saw some record highs and a lot of news on gold. What alternative investment vehicles, and even before we get to specific stocks, should they consider, and which ones do you like?
Well, I would start, if you're a novice investor or a beginner with no gold experience, first of all, read before you invest. Okay. Now, it doesn't have to be my book, The Gold Investor's Handbook, but read and gather some intelligence about what you're doing. Secondly, as a novice or a new investor, look at the exchange-traded funds where you have professional guidance. And the number one is GLD, the symbol for the ETF, GLD, or in silver, which I think has greater potential even than gold, SLV, for the exchange-traded funds. And there's all sorts of exchange-traded funds. The problem there is, if you want to take a look for Eric Sprott, S-P-R-O-T-T, he recently, and that Sprott Resources is a gold bug. Eric Sprott speaks many times on the conspiracy, on keeping the price down, but he has several funds and resource companies listed on stock exchanges. And physical gold buys gold and buys precious metals. One of the big arguments is that he says own the precious metals directly. Have them in your possession, because he says that the central bank gold hoard is illusional, that there actually isn't that much gold being stored, that these he questions whether that gold is actually physically present. So in the U.S., you can buy gold directly from the U.S. Mint, gold and silver coins, only based on the value. You only pay, when you buy a one-ounce coin, you only pay for the 1 ounce. The same in Canada, we have the maple leaf gold coins. Mm-hmm. You pay for the 1 ounce of gold or lesser amounts for smaller coins. What I would caution people of is buying jewelry at a jewelry store is not investing in gold. It already is marked up 50% for artists and for the profit of the jewels. And the really, if you took that same bracelet to a, if you went to a pawn shop, you'll get 10 or 20 cents on the dollar. So that is not an investment. Similarly, numismatic coins are valued because of their scarcity, not because of their content. So if you enjoy collecting coins, that's fine, but don't regard that as gold investing. Only gold is gold. Only gold is money. And so in the U.S., you have great mines like Franco, Nevada, Barrick mines in the United States as well. So you have senior mines. I would start with ETFs and the senior mines. If you have the inclination and the fortitude and you can sleep at night, go to the smaller producers. I just mentioned B2 Gold, BTO, or Colossus, CSI, building a mine, and gain from their startup stages and the likelihood of that production ramping up. And they'll benefit both by increased production and what I see as the increasing price of gold. Okay. Lots of options.
All right, great. Exactly what I wanted to get across here. Now, I've heard a fair amount of debate on the two you mentioned, GLD and SLV, and they are the largest ETFs, whether they really have sufficient backing of gold or is some of it really more of just a financial product. And if people decided to cash out or the price of gold or silver rises dramatically, that they may not have the bullion backing to be able to support that payout. Any views on that? Have you seen some information on that?
I have only read that type of speculation, and that's what it is. You and I can't go into their vaults and count the gold. So for small investors, I think we're safer having the coins in our safety deposit box in a bank.
Deborah?
And let me caution you, in a bank vault, because locally we're...
I don't know how we can do this. I need you to log into the show and listen to the show. And see if you hear voices on the line.
We hear you right now.
I don't hear them here. He just faxed.
Hang on. He wants to obviously research the problem, but we. Sorry, very loud now. I got my typing wrong there. So my apologies. Pete, we can hear your voice very, very clearly at the moment.
Let me just caution you that a local fellow, not my client, I live, had $250,000 in silver at home. He told the wrong people. His house was robbed. He had no insurance. So please get a safety deposit box, put it away. Shares trading like Barrick or the smaller companies or middle-sized. You have senior middle producers, exploration companies. Whatever you have, take the certificate in your own name. Don't rely on somebody else looking after you.
Okay, and how about some of the leveraged ETFs like UGL and AGQ that allow you to get 2-to-1 or 3-to-1 leverage? Any thoughts on those? Do you use them?
Well, I don't use them. I'm against leverage. I've had bad experience of having borrowed large sums of money and lost it. So I am more cautionary. And of course, as I grow older, I'm more conservative. So no, they're not for me. I can appreciate people who are more speculative, wanting to multiply by using leverage, but that is not what I caution. Ron, I want to mention that if your listeners would like to write to me directly off my website, Jack Bass Team, they can send an email to info@jackbassteam.com, and that'll reach me.
Okay, yeah, we will repeat that later on as well. But info@jackbassteam.com.
Yeah.
All right, now let's go back to some of those gold mining exploration companies. Would they potentially get an additional boost as gold and silver prices rise because they hit a break-even point, a certain price of the, you know, the gold has to be a certain price for their production to be profitable?
That
once
is,
they
that
hit
is
that break-even
a great,
point.
Yeah, there's mm-hmm. a great, that's a great comment, Ron, because what has happened, and this is worldwide, the cost of production has risen dramatically. And this is because, in particular in developing countries, the labor in South Africa goes on strike, labor in South America has gone on strike, and they've driven up the labor costs, which are a great impediment to the gold companies. Secondly, as you've probably seen in areas as diverse as Mongolia, Bolivia, or Venezuela, the countries are either confiscating the gold mines are there, or they're imposing great taxes, which raises the break-even point. So you have to be very careful. That's why in my Gold Investors Handbook, I've got 70 companies that I've selected for investors, and I give the websites and the background that I have, and you want to keep a track of their break-even point.
Okay, very, very good point, and let me just dig in on a couple specifics. I happen to use these in the past number of years. These happen to be some of the juniors. Arcana is one of them, AUNFF, and this happens to be some of these trade actually under different symbols on the U.S. exchanges versus on the Toronto exchange. And Pan American, MXOM, which I've done extremely well with, and then I've had significant losses with Reliance Resources, which changed names. It used to be started with Gold or Great American. I don't remember the exact name, but it was GDPEF, and that's why the symbol's kind of out of whack with the name. But you know, what are your thoughts on some of these? Would they be listed in your research?
I have to tell you, Ron, I don't want to insult you, but
that's
those
fine.
Aren't listed. What you might look at, can I mention one for silver? This is a very big company, Pan American Silver, now trading at about $17. Bill Gates of Microsoft invested a substantial amount of money about 3 years ago in Pan American Silver. He is one of the largest holders. And so if you're inclined, as I am, to believe that silver traditionally traded at something like a 10-to-1 ratio, and that's really
right.
fallen out of whack. But silver, because it's an industrial use, used to be in film before digital cameras, but it's still widely used in the new technologies, and widely used means it's consumed and not available for recycling. And so I see in the next few years that silver is going to take a dramatic rise, even larger than what I've predicted for gold. And so you can look at SLV, the ETF we mentioned before, but such stocks as Pan American Silver is just a great play and a great way to play on the silver potential.
Okay, all right. That's it's interesting, the same name, Pan American, but the one happens to be a gold stock, one of these, actually a penny stock, but has been, like I said, one of the fun ones I've had some good success with.
Good.
But interesting. I look forward to looking through that list. I did go through some of your commentary. I didn't go through the list yet, so I will be doing a little bit of research, obviously, in the next few weeks. Now, before I forget, I want to make sure that our listeners get the information of how to reach you, and let me get some of the names out. Correct me if I make any mistake. Your main website, and the one they can reach you through, is jackbassteam.com.
Right.
And specifically, your email through there is info@jackbassteam.com. Okay? And then for the market commentary, it's amp2012.com.
Right.
And for the gold commentary, it is ampgoldportfolio.com.
Exactly right.
All right, so we want to make sure that our listeners can get more information and reach you if they do have some questions, and I'm sure there's going to be a lot of interest in that research you've done. Now, we've covered a lot of ground today. What aspects of investment or gold investing did we miss? We even touched on jewelry. Don't buy it for that reason, but obviously a lot of gold buyers are trying to, you know, people to get to pawn their gold. So obviously they have confidence the gold prices are going up. They want to grab it while it's cheap. What other comments would you make, or topics did we miss?
Well, I just want to reemphasize that you have to take control over your own future, and that means, as dismal as it is, reading and researching and then spending some time each day market is and what particular companies are doing. There is a wealth of information available out there. I would start, of course, with my own book, The Gold Investor's Handbook, on Amazon.com. I always tell, when I make speeches, I tell people, listen, if you come to me, I will charge you $100 an hour for my advice. You can buy the book for $19.95. Start there before you advance. Also, don't go to Hickle Pickle Nickel. For most people, that's like buying a lottery ticket. That is not investing. Investing means doing the research, having a strategy in writing, and then following that strategy. From time to time, you are going to have to buy and sell because companies fall in or fall out of your strategy. But when you have a written strategy, you sleep nights knowing that you're perfectly safe. And the other emphasis was gold as insurance, not necessarily to make a great profit, but when you balance your 80% of equities with 20% of gold, you'll be able to sleep nights regardless of what Obama does or the GOP does or whether Syria becomes a failed state and devolves and harms the future of the Middle East and then of Europe. In that process, you have to be able to recover. So when you have some of your assets in cash, some in gold, and some in the equities, you're going to be able to fight another day. Don't give yourself over in one direction. Don't go to 100% gold. Don't go to 100% equities. But do the research. You're responsible for your own future.
I think you just helped me coin a new phrase for getting prepared for investing. It's the three R's: reading, research, and radio. Wealth DNA Radio. You don't want to miss that one on your list.
Absolutely.
This is where people come to find out what they should be researching and what topics make sense for them, and understand the overview. And obviously, they've captured a lot of information in 1 hour, and I really appreciate your taking the time. I learned a lot. I'm sure our listeners learned a lot. And, of course, the archives will be out there, so our listenership on the archive, swamps who can listen, real time. So thank you, Jack, for being able to join us.
Ron, it's been a real pleasure talking with you. I appreciate very much what your listeners don't see is your great preparation for our show.
Well, appreciate that. Thank you, Jack, and hopefully we'll have you back again.
Excellent.
Now, how do I wrap up this very good and logical conversation with Jack A. Bass? I guess I could highlight some key points. One, if you're a do-it-yourself investor and managing your own portfolio, today's topic is a very good one. Gold and precious metals should be in everyone's portfolio and should be factored into your asset allocation. For the last 5 years, the price appreciation has been phenomenal. If gold prices rise dramatically and become a larger percentage of your portfolio, you might want to sell a little. And vice versa, when prices are down, buy some more. Okay, so it's the normal asset allocation. Now, the general advice you'll get from financial advisors to have precious metals as a part of your commodity segment of your portfolio, and they say that commodities might be 5 to 10%, because of course they're not selling you that portion of your portfolio. Now, Jack Bass, who happens to follow both the overall market as well as gold and precious metals, is saying that gold piece should be closer to 20%. Regardless of how you do it, again, as you allocate, you want to make sure that you're buying on low periods, and this might just be one of those opportunities. We talked about the numbers. Gold is way up. It just happens to be drifting down in the last year or so. So maybe this would be a good time to be accumulating. Now, Jack's advice on gold and precious metals tells me I might want to have even more than my current allocation today. That is February of 2013. For somebody listening to the archives in 2030, you should consider the factors Jack talked about earlier in the show to decide how much gold to have in your portfolio, because times will be different. Also, based on Jack's advice, now is a good time to add gold and precious metals. Prices are low, and it appears that there's a bigger opportunity. And there's already a big opportunity in equities. And he's saying increase your exposure to equities, and gold and precious metals will do at least as well. Now, is there a conspiracy to depress the price of gold? Now, and why would there be a conspiracy? Well, to make inflation seem low, because that's what the government statistics show, even though you don't feel it. H.L. Quist is one of them, brought up the topic to me, and Jack disagrees with him. He doesn't think there's an outright conspiracy, but yes, prices are down, and yes, media attention seems to focus on when somebody's selling gold. They don't mention when they're buying. And what's the best way to invest in gold? Well, Jack says start out with a little bit of ETFs. Start out with some of the major miners. Also some junior stocks. Re-listen to that portion and think through, have you started in the right sequence? And there are a number of opportunities in those junior stocks. He tracks a lot of them. So check out that website, and just don't overdo it. And you know what? George Soros sold half of his GLD. Well, he followed in my footsteps. 2 years ago, I sold all of mine, and I replaced it with other gold ETFs and gold stocks. So I didn't get a lot of media attention on that, but I can't disagree with his action. We just don't know where he put that money. Now, on past shows, we talked about the potential end to the bull market in bonds. Now, gold is clearly not a substitute for bonds, since it doesn't provide you any income. On the other hand, it's a great hedge for bonds, since rising inflation will ultimately decrease the value of bonds but increase the price of gold. And that's the idea behind a hedge, to have some investments that zig while others zag. And that, of course, is the technical terminology we use here, which is a great segue. We'll be continuing our series on alternative investments on the next show. We'll have Nicholas Vardy to give us some inside scoop about hedge funds. When I met him many years ago, he was running a hedge fund and one of the few people I know who did the right thing. What is that? tune in, you'll find out. On upcoming shows, we'll have experts on angel capital, venture capital, mortgage notes, and a guest to share some insights on the level of education that the financial advisors and planners that you might know, what education do they have in alternative investments? And remember, a good way to increase your wealth is to tune into this show twice a month. We'll share the investment fundamentals, some great ideas, inspire you to be as wealthy as you want to be. The next Wealth DNA radio show will be the second and fourth Monday of March. That is March 11th, 9 a.m. Arizona time, same place, same time. And remember, the archives of past shows and this show are available on wealthdna.us. If you have some suggestions or questions or you haven't received my emails reminding you about the show, just send an email to ron@wealthdna.us. We'll keep you posted about future shows and events. I'll be increasing my positions in precious metals. In the meantime, happy investing.
You've been listening to Wealth DNA with Ron Naraki on Arizona Boomer Radio. Arizona Boomer Radio is produced by the Boomer and the Babe Incorporated and can be heard Monday through Friday. You can sign up for their online magazine at boomerandthebabe.com. To reach the Boomer and the Babe, email host@boomerandthebabe.com or friend them on facebook.com/boomerandbabe. And on Blog Talk, you can friend them at blogtalkradio.com/boomerandbabe. Follow their tweets at twitter.com/boomerandbabe. Be sure to make the second half of your life the best half of your life. And remember, at 50, you're just getting started.